Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hey, Billy, why don't we tell them what we're about, man?
So we're here to welcome you to the Madhouse Chronicles. It's a talk show with myself, Billy Morrison.
And me, Ozzy Osbourne.
This man, Prince of Darkness. And we watch and react to the maddest internet clips. What do we discuss, Ozzy?
Drugs, rock and roll, aliens, all that kind of shit.
Drugs, rock and roll, aliens, and all that kinds of shit. Come and join Ozzy and myself. Visit osbournemediahouse.com to get special access to...
Come on!
What do you say? Do you think it's the wildest show on the internet?
Oh.
You're listening to All Things Therapy with Lisa Tahir, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hello there. Welcome to All Things Therapy Podcast. Today is December 2nd, 2021, which is a palindrome. It's spelled the same way, forwards and backwards. I thought that was pretty cool when I realized it a little bit ago. Welcome. And I want to do my sponsors and a shout out to a podcast first before I tell you a little bit about what I do. I have been listening to a podcast that I found called Sleep Whispers, Whispers. And the host, Harris, is so unique. He whispers his podcasts to you. And he started this show back in 2016 to help him quiet his own mind to be able to fall asleep. It's really unique. If you're looking for something different to help you fall asleep, check out his show. The website is sleepwhispers.com. You can find Sleep Whispers on iTunes and everywhere else that podcasts are found. He's rated a top health podcast. And I just want to thank you, Harris, for what you're doing and for also working with me and promoting All Things Therapy to your audience. I just think it's so unique that you whisper your episodes to help people quiet their minds and fall to sleep. Awesome job. If you are looking for a different way to do therapy besides, say, working with someone like me in private practice, my sponsor, BetterHelp.com, is offering you 10% off your first month to try them out, doing virtual therapy, either phone or video, through their platform. They offer financial aid to those of you in every state and license to work with you with various issues having to do with anxiety, depression, relationship issues, work issues, personal health, whatever it may be. So check them out if you'd like to. Take 10% off your first month as my listener by going to betterhelp.com/ATT for All Things Therapy. And it's spelled BETTERHELP.com/ATT for All Things Therapy. You've probably seen them. They're doing a lot of advertising in the last year, and they're a really great platform. If you are interested in working with me, I am accepting new clients. I'm really excited to offer you a 30-day intensive with me based upon the principles in my book, The Chiron Effect, Healing Our Core Wounds Through Astrology, Empathy, and Self-Forgiveness. My book has been endorsed by His Holiness, the 14th Dalai Lama, who sent me the most beautiful letter saying about the principles laid out in my book having to do with empathizing to our own inner needs and applying self-forgiveness and compassion, incorporating meditation as a tool to access those states of mind that align us with the solution versus the problems that we're so very familiar with. And His Holiness believes that my work will be a great help to many of you who read my book. It's such an honor. I'd love for you to have it. My book is available everywhere books are sold. You can even go to your local brick and mortar, give my name, Lisa Tahir, or the book, The Chiron Effect, and they can order it for you if you don't want to shop at, say, Barnes & Noble or Walmart.com or Amazon.com. Go to where it's easy. I'd love for you to have my book. And please submit a written review after. I read those reviews, and I really enjoy seeing the feedback. So thank you for that. Again, my website, I didn't even say it, nolatherapy.com, NOLATHERAPY.com. I'm actually feeling so excited to get into the guest portion of the show. Today, we are with Wendy Tamas Robbins. She is a corporate lawyer working in social impact investing by day. She is also a speaker. She's a coach. She's the author of this book that I'm holding up if you're watching live on video. It's called The Box, An Invitation to Freedom from Anxiety. It's an Amazon bestseller. And Wendy just has such a powerful story. She is someone who actually created the support that she needed to heal and recover and work through anxiety that was debilitating in many ways, obsessive compulsive thoughts, panic disorders, and these things ran in the background of her life for nearly 40 years. And she is here to talk to us about ways that she now helps people overcome these issues. Welcome, Wendy.
Hi, Lisa. Thanks so much for having me. And thank you for the work that you do. It's so inspiring. It's so important. So thank you.
You're so welcome. Before we came live, I was just saying how much I love your Instagram. Mm-hmm. And I want to give that to our listeners. It's Wendy_Tamas_Robbins, correct?
Yes, yes.
Awesome. You're welcome. How are you today?
I'm great. We just got our Christmas tree.
Oh, that's fun.
One of those special days. Yeah.
And you're in Massachusetts, correct?
Yes, yes. Just north of Boston.
Oh, so it's cold there.
It's actually a very mild day. It was the best day to get the tree. I was all bundled up and I was sweating. We don't get many of those. Yeah, it was nice.
It sounds really nice. And, you know, I want to get into your book because you talk about so many important things that resonate with me as a therapist. One of the things that struck me is where you talk about feeling versus fearing. And I don't know where you want to start, but I have some bullet points and I just wanted to kind of launch with that because I found it to be really pivotal, especially during a time when people are feeling so much fear and how you really creatively cope with that by encouraging us to feel it. And I wondered if you could share some more about that.
Sure. So much of my own struggle was around being terrified by all of these anxious feelings in my body and thoughts that I was having that I saw over time how that was really exacerbating my condition, right? And because this emotion inside of us is, it's energy and it needs to be processed and released and then we need to move on. And when we're sort of terrified of it and we just keep pushing it down, further back and not addressing it and letting it come out to be processed in a healthy way, it starts to really wreak havoc on us mentally and a lot of times physically as well. So that's a big part of what I talk about in the book, and I've written an article about it as well. And there's a blog on my website really about how important it is to be willing to feel these emotions rather than fear them.
And, you know, how do you, because you talk about as well, which really resonated with me, the role of compassion while healing. And I feel like that's fitting in because often these anxious thoughts are very brutal. They're very abrupt. They're very critical and negative. And can you talk to us about the role of compassion in your healing personally and how you help others?
Yeah, it's really huge. I mean, when I distill down my book and my healing journey, so much of it, if I can just pick one word, it would be self-love and compassion and words like that. That was really the cornerstone of all of it, because I had been, to your point, beating myself up for so long. And that was a big reason why I was hiding it, and why I think a lot of other people try and hide it or deal with it themselves, because there's so much shame around it that you should be able to deal with this. You're better than this. What did I do wrong? Why am I not like other people? All of those critical thoughts. And, you know, I talk about sometimes in one of my programs that door number three is really the way that we find healing. Door number one is refusing to look at the problem and just push it away, sort of that fearing it. Okay. And door number two is just being in it and being triggered by all of these things all of the time and not okay. understanding that there's a better way, like dealing with it in a negative way and letting it absorb you, versus door number three is really being curious about what's happening. Why are you feeling anxious? Why are you so stressed out? Whatever it may be. Yes. And then bringing that self-compassion to it. Of course I feel scared. Of course I'm overburdened. Of course I'm overwhelmed, whatever it may be. And then, you know, filling that space with that compassion.
I hear you really empathetically attuning to yourself and encouraging others to do that, and being curious about the anxiety and the messages that it has for us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I love the way that you say that, the messages that it has for us, because that's exactly what my journey looks like and what I teach, the process that I bring my clients through, is looking at our past and using it like a flashlight. Like if you feel anxious about certain moments or certain things or certain people that you think about, those are pain points that we need to go back and learn more, discover what really happened and heal those open wounds. Yeah. And then also you can use it looking into your future, like another light that's shining on things, opportunities that you have to build resistance because of your anxiety. If there's anxiety coming up for you, I was always in a place where I would resist and I would say no. And that's where the title for my book came up, like the box. I was just in this tiny little box that I wasn't living my life to the fullest. So it's really a place where you can then say, if I'm feeling anxious about this and it's not a real threat to my safety or something like that, that's probably a place where you can challenge yourself and step outside of your comfort zone, right? Yes. That line in the sand that you drew, and step into that life that's waiting for you on the other side.
And Wendy, you use that metaphor of the box throughout your book, starting, if I'm remembering correctly, with when you were, I think, around six, and a big box that maybe a refrigerator came in, mm-hmm. and you used it like so many kids do to kind of make a house that you played in. Is that mm-hmm. accurate? And you felt really safe there emotionally because you grew up in a house that had a lot of disruption, and that was a place that you felt safe. Is that yeah. accurate?
Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah, that's really where the metaphor came from. And when I started this process, my own healing journey, that came up for me several times at the beginning. And I was like, what was going on in that box, you know? And then it was so clear to me that once that box was thrown in the trash, that that's really the mental construct that I was carrying with me for all of those years that I was trying to understand what this anxiety was and how I could protect myself from it.
Mm-hmm. And the box, I sense you felt, just really shielded mm-hmm. from it physically and emotionally. Being so young, you know, children don't have the skills to understand their emotions, to give names to them. And so it's like you just knew you were safe there, and then it's thrown away and it's like you're exposed mm-hmm. all over again.
And right.
And you use that metaphor as the box as well, ongoingly talking about compartmentalization, just one of the seemingly self-protection skills or defense mechanisms that people often use, you know, is compartmentalizing areas of their lives. But it's not effective, as you know, at a certain point, because you're cut off from parts of yourself. Can you talk to us about how you started to realize that and wanting to change it, and then actually being able to change for yourself?
Yeah, sure. There's a lot to unpack there. So one of the first things I did once I realized that, you know, had this idea of the box, I needed to understand what the bricks in those walls of that box looked like, because there was a little bit of everything. There was body image issues. There was perfectionism. There was people pleasing because of the chaotic environment that I grew up in, right? You're just hyper vigilant, like keep everyone happy, keep the doors locked, keep everyone safe. Yeah. So there were so many bricks in these walls that I needed to really look at. And like I said before, heal those wounds if there were open wounds there and understand what that child was going through and trying to process during that time. And really, that's how I dismantled those walls, was going back and sitting and doing a lot of reparenting with that child. Mm-hmm. And then understanding too how those walls then affected me. What did it look like while I was living inside of that box? Because to your point, like if you're walled off literally and emotionally from everyone around you, even though what you seek is connection, because we know how healing that connection is for us, right? Yes. If you can't speak your truth and all you're presenting to the world is this picture perfect facade because you think that that's the armor you need to hide the unraveling inside, you can't build those connections. It's not relatable. It's you feel a separation all of the time, right?
Right, right.
Because you're not presenting your true self. And that's really what happened in my first marriage. It happened in a lot of relationships for me until those walls really came down and I was able to give and receive love in a very deep, honest way because I had revealed, you know, my inner self was now matching my outer self.
Yes, there is congruency there, congruence exactly. there.
Exactly, right.
You know, and I want listeners to know that growing up, you were and still are super type A and achievement oriented. You got a scholarship to Dartmouth for college. You played basketball in high school, right? And then got mm-hmm. a scholarship to Dartmouth and varsity track as well.
Yeah, through the javelin.
Right, that's right. You threw the javelin, which you didn't even enjoy. But what didn't the coach see some real talent? So it's kind of like, okay, I'll do this.
Right. Yeah. It was very strange, but it was very calculated at the time because I knew basketball players were a dime a dozen, and I played softball, and they were a dime a dozen. I played volleyball, but javelin was a little, you know, outside the box again, to use the metaphor again. But and I knew that doing so well academically that would set me apart from other people. And it's exactly what happened. My junior year, I was throwing at the state championships and the Dartmouth head coach was there and saw me and started recruiting me. So it really worked, you know, it worked to my advantage at the time. But looking back, I'm not so sure it was the right decision for my mental health, you know.
Well, that's what I wanted to ask you about, because in the book you write so articulately about the struggle, how much you loved basketball and you really found an identity, you found a community, you found something that helped you to really show up as your authentic self. And then I felt it like crumbling away. And I think so many people can relate when they read your book, like doing something they love, but here's this opportunity, you know, an Ivy League school offering you a scholarship, doing something that you don't love, but it's like the opportunity, the prestige, what everyone else was thinking was so awesome for you. And that's when things started to really break down, mm-hmm. I think, inside of you. I wonder if you could speak to now with the hindsight you have to that age that at that time.
Yeah, she, that's emotional. What did she need? Yeah, I really, you know, I hate to think of that I regret that decision, because I really don't, because I think it mm-hmm. made me who I am today.
Absolutely.
But at the time, I needed permission to not have so much pressure to perform and achieve. And
worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hey, Billy, why don't we tell them what we're about, man?
So we're here to welcome you to the Madhouse Chronicles. It's a talk show with myself, Billy Morrison.
And me, Ozzy Osbourne.
This man, Prince of Darkness. And we watch and react to the maddest internet clips. What do we discuss, Ozzy?
Drugs, rock and roll, aliens, all that kind of shit.
Drugs, rock and roll, aliens, and all that kinds of shit. Come and join Ozzy and myself. Visit osbournemediahouse.com to get special access to...
Come on!
What do you say? Do you think it's the wildest show on the internet?
In my environment, there weren't people pushing me. I was, most of it was internal. I was pushing myself because that's what I thought would get me the love and the connection that I was looking for.
Yeah.
And I wish that I had just, you know, had gone to a school that I could just play. And And I talk about that at the beginning of the book too. Like as a child, all I wanted to do was play. I love that word because it's so important that we have that lightness of being, right? There was no lightness in my world. It was all pressure. It was all performance oriented. Mm-hmm. And this was just going to be another way to earn external validation, right? To have an Ivy League education. And of course it served me over time, but yes, there was, it's like that decision pulled a thread. And when I went to that school, I had this identity crisis that I think a lot of kids do going to college. And that's why so many of them struggle with anxiety. I have clients who are college age and it's really a difficult time. And to be such a fish out of water like I was, and I thought it was so amazing that coming from where I was, public school and so forth, that I could get there. But there's such a disconnect. It was so difficult that it was really the first time I hit rock bottom. And I was calling a suicide hotline sophomore year, which was, I was just struggling more than I had ever comprehended was even possible.
And I think the universe was definitely leading you, because had you not made that decision, you know, you wouldn't be where you are today and who you are in this book, which offers so many valuable insights and experiences into what it is like to experience anxiety and panic and self-doubt and even questioning your own value and worth in those moments of calling the suicide hotline, and how many of us have been through that, you know, and feel like we're so alone. So I think by you accepting that scholarship, though it didn't, you know, feel like it was your happiest choice at the time, I feel like it's really led you to being your full and authentic self.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's a little story in the book about talking to a boy freshman year at Dartmouth and him asking me why I'm even there.
Oh, yeah.
And I say, I want to inspire people. I want to be an inspiration for others to live their best life. And I really wanted to be a politician and I wanted to go into government. And that was, you know, I was on the lawyer path. And it's, I remember the difficult moments of seeing, you know, being on campaigns and thinking, I can't even sit in the audience without having a panic attack. So how could I ever stand on that stage? It's just never going to happen for me. And my dreams were just crumbling and, you know, in front of me. And it was so painful. And now, to your point, it's kind of come full circle where I'm doing it. I'm presenting this to the world in a way to serve people, right? To invite them sort of into the light and expose their own struggles so that we can all bear the weight of this together, especially now during a pandemic. And it's just so prevalent. So I feel like I am fulfilling that desire in some way. And that path is just, it got me to the same place, but in a very different way.
Yeah. And I remember that section of your book because it kind of took me aback when he asked you and you gave this super thoughtful, you know, very enlightened answer about wanting to help. And it, didn't he say something like, oh, I just want to play, was it football?
Hockey.
I just want to play hockey. Like, and it was so such contrast, you know, to your thoughtful answer. And in some ways to me, it was like, wow, like the levity he had in life. You know, there's something kind of awesome about that. He was just there to play hockey.
Right. He was just there to play. Right.
Right. And what was that like? Because I feel like that was like an important moment in the book, that contrast between your answer and his, almost like it's okay to just want to play.
Right. I think it shows the contrast that, that I was mentioning before around somebody who doesn't feel the weight of the world at all, and how I had almost like this prepared canned response. Like I was on this like podium, like, oh my gosh, you asked me the question and now I'm going to give this, you know, prepared speech. And he was just like, I've never prepared a speech. I'm just here to play. And I was not in that space at all. So yeah, I think it projects that stark contrast between the two mindsets.
It does. And for listeners and viewers who get Wendy's book, you know, it starts off talking about, I don't see how you could have had a lighter approach given your childhood experiences where you were having to take care of your mom's feelings as such a young girl when she was, you know, melting down emotionally, and you became that caretaker at such a young age, and life was more serious for you than other children. And I'm curious, what age did you start to have that awareness? Like, hey, maybe this is different. Maybe this, you know, something's not right.
5.
Oh, wow. So you knew that young. Okay.
I think 5 was, I was in the box at 5, and I was already taking care of everyone, and I would almost smell it, you know, like 5 or 10 minutes before the blow up would start. I could tell, I could feel it in the air. It was like a storm brewing, you know, and my brother and sister, not so much. And so I would almost prepare like for a storm. Literally, I just had the image of me like running around the kitchen, like, oh, let's put some of the toys away. You be quiet. Let's do, you know, just calm everything down so that this storm doesn't continue to get closer and closer, because I knew what the consequences were at a pretty young age. And, you know, to my mom's defense, it was an unhealed, untreated trauma and mental health issue that, you know, that's that generational mental health that we, so many people struggle with, because it just wasn't dealt with back in the day. Like it is now. And, you know, she was just on Valium and drinking alcohol and doing everything she could to tame it, but you can't keep that genie in the bottle very long, you know? So yeah, for me, it started at a very young age and, just continued on.
And trying to find your sense of control in your household. I really related to that, that by being super intuitive and sensitive to the emotional climate, the emotional weather in your house, and like, let's do this and that, doing everything in your little one's power to keep things calm. You know, though there's no way to actually do that as we learn as adults, just all that you could do to maintain a sense of control. And it was interesting to read how your awareness of that heightened, you know, to being able and willing to kind of like release control, which is so scary. Yet I remember at one point you were willing to consider that. And I think any of us that have experienced anxiety or childhood trauma can really relate to your book and that healing journey. Mm-hmm. And I'm curious for you about the issue of control and turning it over, surrendering it. How do you conceptualize that now?
You know, really practicing non-attachment and surrender, to your point. Because I think a lot of that came from finding that calm, quiet center that was always within me, that was underneath all of the pain and anxiety. And I did that really through, I really mined through all of that anxiety to that spot through meditation. And I had never thought meditation would be possible for me, because my thoughts were racing so much. But I was given a meditation by Martha Beck, who I'm sure you've heard of.
I've heard her name. Yeah.
Yeah. She's a wonderful life coach, amazing, number one, you know, New York Times bestselling author, the whole thing. So she gave me a meditation that really started me on my way to allow my thoughts to just run and run and run. And through that process, I started to really have the anxiety come up in me. It was a place to start to process it. And then I found that really deep, calm, quiet space that it sort of turned a key, like, and opened a door for me into a different part of of my, you know, my spiritual life, my spiritual being, I guess. It was a different door inside of my house, whatever that looks like. And I realized that I stopped identifying with my anxiety. It was no longer who I was. It was something that was happening to me because of what I had gone through. It wasn't me anymore. I had that break, that separation. And that was very, very profound for me. And so in that space, that quiet space, that authentic space, that's where I've learned to surrender and relinquish control because, it's just not my emotional state, that anxiety is not so tied to it anymore.
You know, what you're saying right now, Wendy, is reminding me of in your work where you talk about diffusing our triggers. Mm-hmm. I wanted to ask if you can talk to us about how we can do that because it's such an important skill to have.
Yeah. So this really came up for me when I became a stepmom because, God, those little kids, you know, they look really cute and sweet and they can just do some damage to you mentally and emotionally, right? It's such a mirror back to who you are, who you thought you would be, especially not having my own children. It's just, there was a lot to unpack there. So I would feel very triggered in that situation and really had to find a way. That was the impetus for me to find a way to figure out how to diffuse it for me because I was having panic attacks. You know, they were really triggering my fight or flight response. And I was in a kitchen. I wasn't in the jungle. I was like, what is happening here?
Yeah.
So I think for me, the process that I like to work with my clients with that I find really effective is to start to tell the story in a different way, in a very neutral way, because words have meaning to us and they hold a lot of weight, which then brings emotion, right? So trying to diffuse that emotional response, if we start to tell the story in the narrative in a very neutral way, it starts to diffuse that. It takes the emotion out of it, right? Rather than even calling them my stepchildren, just call them like a person or a human. And I'm just sitting down at a table with humans who I love. I can infuse, you know, some positive emotion and listen to what they're saying and just do that, right? So break it all down and neutralize it. And then in that moment, I would also bring in like the 5-4-1, 5-4-3-2-1 technique if I was really starting to panic and just start to ground myself in my senses. And that's another way to neutralize. And then once I could really diffuse the panic response, then you can start to rebuild the story. Mm-hmm. And that's really where you're moving from a fear mindset, right? You're triggered, meaning you're afraid of something, into a growth mindset. So once you've neutralized it, you can start to move into that growth and rebuild that story in any way you want. Like, how are we going to create our own relationships based on, I always say as a stepmom, I look for the cracks that only I can fit through, right? Because there's a lot of pieces to this puzzle. Every family is different. They all look and function differently. So there's a place for everyone if you just want to love those kids, right? So when you take those labels away and those words that hold so much emotion, like I was saying, and they can be so triggering, I think that you can create a new, beautiful story.
I like what you're saying. And I think it's true as well in mental health treatment and in the therapy world too. Sometimes a client will come to me and be so identified with a diagnosis. And even if that diagnosis is accurate, I think it can be so limiting. And going back to the box, like keeping someone in this box of who they are, and instead of what they can do, what they can't do, it causes someone to be so focused, I think, upon limitations. Mm-hmm. And I'm hearing in what you're sharing, this is a way to look at things differently in your life by new language or even some neutrality. And then being able in that growth mindset way that you mentioned, kind of really step out of the box of your limitations and into your possibilities.
Absolutely. And words are so important because they're labels, right? And even when I think about as a child, who I wanted to be labeled as, like that seemed important to me at the time because I thought that that external definition was where I was going to gain, you know, love and support and all of that, that validation. Whereas now it's the exact opposite. I see labels as so limiting, to your point. Like,
yes.
even as I continue to grow and try and just keep peeling back my own layers, it's interesting to think about what your barriers are. A lot of times they are the labels that you've put on yourself, right? How you've always seen yourself, because people have seen you this way. So you've adopted it and you're identifying with it now. Yeah. So that's a lot of the cleansing that needs to happen, right? The unteaming, like Glennon would say. So Glennon Doyle, Glennon Doyle. I know her. Like, she's my neighbor. Like Glennon would say.
You never know. You could absolutely meet or have a conversation, you know. And so that, what you were just saying, Wendy, I was curious about your process personally writing your book, since you do share so much about your life and your family and the thoughts in your head and the feelings you were going through, and just viscerally, like, I could feel along with you. And that's what, to me, makes your book so powerful and such a wonderful read, is because we can really connect to your experience and then our own. It caused me to flash on so many memories of things in my upbringing and make these connections and just reaffirm some things about myself. And I'm curious, what was it like to write this book?
Well, first, that's great. That's such it's so wonderful to hear that it brought that stuff up for you, because that was really what I wanted to do when I started thinking about sharing it with the world. And I've heard that before. So that's great. So I didn't write it after I found freedom. I was writing this book as I was going through my process to find freedom from my disorders. So I had done a lot of work after my first marriage. So I got divorced like mid-30s. And then for the next 10 years or so, I did a lot of work around exposure therapy, reparenting, things like that. But not as intense as what I went through as I wrote this book. Because what I found was, when I found my current husband and we met, I realized I was still accommodating my anxiety on a daily basis. And it was really still holding me back. And I could see this other life so clearly that I was so passionate about finding and stepping into and removing this barrier, right? So I started writing just as a cathartic process, knowing that, I called it my quest. I was like, I'm going to have to find the answer. Could I ever live free from my anxiety? And I knew I'd have to write my way through it. And so I didn't even realize until about halfway through that there was really this process unfolding. And at that point, I knew that I was finding freedom. And I didn't know how the story was going to end entirely, but I could see that this was something that I could share with the world. So I think it is so raw, because I was really just, working through it all.
Yeah.
I mean, it is the work that I went through is on those pages. It's not sanitized or distilled down in any way.
You know, one of the thoughts I did have, Wendy, is I was reading, being a therapist, and I started therapy as a client when I was 21, and it was so helpful, and that's what helped me realize that I wanted to be a therapist. I did have thoughts like, oh my gosh, I just wanted to see you go to therapy. And I'm curious about that journey for you, like when you were a younger person and what therapy has, you know, just your personal relationship to it.
Yeah, I was not a good patient.
What do you mean by that?
I wasn't willing to say I'm afraid of harming myself and others, to be quite honest, because those intrusive thoughts started at Dartmouth, and I didn't go on my study abroad because for that exact reason. And I told my dad some story about joining a sorority and we couldn't afford it. I had to make up this whole thing because I couldn't say those words out loud. I thought they would kick me out of school and put me in a hospital. So I, you know, after the call to the suicide hotline, I went to the therapist, and when they say things like, how do you feel? What are you thinking? What's going on with you? I didn't know how to lie my way through it and get the therapy that I needed. I didn't even understand what therapy really was. So then I went back again in my late 20s, really just to get medication, because my thoughts were just constantly running. I was just in a constant state of panic. And again, I just wasn't willing at the time, because I had never heard anybody say those words. I didn't know that that was a mental health condition. It just wasn't spoken of. So one thing that really saved me when I hit another rock bottom in my early 30s was finding these mental health tapes for people suffering with anxiety and depression, where one of those tapes was a group therapy session that had been put on this tape, and they were talking about everything I was going through. And it was like a light bulb going off, and it really started to save my life in a way, you know, because I understood that I wasn't completely broken and I could maybe say these words and I wasn't the only one in the world, you know?
Yes. Well, I think one of the greatest kind of teaching points in your story is that no matter what was happening, no matter how rock bottom you felt or were, that you always listened to yourself and it led you to exactly where you needed to be. Because I cannot help but wonder if you would have gone to therapy and said some of the thoughts in your head, they might have pulled you out of school. They might have put you somewhere. And I don't think that would have been the best
thing. Or medicated me in a different
way. Right, for your healing and recovery. So it's like, you know, and I think the message in your book about really listening to yourself is so important. It's a thread from the beginning, from when you were a little girl to the end. Mm-hmm. And I'm just so glad you listened to yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. That authentic voice, you know, that never went away. As loud as the anxiety got, I would still push myself. Like, I know this isn't right. I know this isn't me. This isn't all that I meant to do, is to just manage my disorders for the rest of my life. And so I think that is, I agree that that's something that really is a strong thread throughout the book. And I always say that now to clients and in programs, that the whole point of this work, this internal journey, is to really lower the volume on the stress and anxiety so that we can hear that authentic voice again, because it's static, right? It's just like tuning into a radio station. If there's too much static, you just can't hear the music. So that's what the work is all about.
Absolutely. Wendy, I want our listeners and viewers to know where to find you. And I want to say, I love your website. It's so well done.
Thanks.
And there's so much, good information. So I wanted to tell you that, because it's not often that I encounter just such a wonderfully informative website. And where can people find you and work with you?
Yeah. So the website is WendyTamisRobbins.com with two B's. I have a lot of my other podcasts that I've guested on and articles. So I really try to make it a supportive environment and community in there. And then for people that sign up for my newsletter/blog, I try to provide them with even additional support and discounts for coaching. And I have a new store coming out with some things to end the stigma surrounding mental health. That should be up in a week. So I'm excited about that. So they can find me there. And then on Instagram, as you had mentioned in the beginning, it's Wendy_Tamis_Robbins. Also LinkedIn, but everything's really on my website. And the book is available on my website as well. And my coaching and my corporate programs, where I work with and partner with companies and law firms to help them change their corporate culture, really, to create a safe space.
So awesome. You're so awesome. Thank you for taking your time with us today.
Thanks so much. It was so much fun.
You're welcome, Wendy. And I'll see you around on Instagram.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, bye.
Thank you. Bye.
You're welcome. Y'all, thank you for listening or watching today. If you're watching on live stream, on Facebook, on YouTube, or listening on an audio platform, please take your time, take a moment, and give All Things Therapy a star rating and a written review. It helps so much to get my show in front of more listeners. It is my desire to change consciousness one conversation at a time. I believe we do that. Reach out to me if you want to work together in therapy. I do all virtual sessions, and I'd love to work with you. NOLA Therapy on social media and nolatherapy.com website. Mwah. Bye.
You're listening to All Things Therapy with Lisa Tahir, only on LA Talk Radio.